Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, September 5th, 2014. The Chinese government donates millions of dollars to South Sudan's government at a time when other countries are suspending aid to Juba.
This grant of $25 million will be targeting specifically the issue of agricultural projects, for example, to assist part of humanitarian disaster. We have got this food insecurity.
And young people in Juba use sports to help them forget the challenges of living in fear.
Like football, because when we play football, you feel fit. And when you play football, you can become a star of South Sudan. Like in Uganda there, they have stars, but here we don't have stars.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. China has pledged $25 million to address South Sudan's serious food shortages caused by the country's eight-month-long conflict. The announcement comes a day after the Netherlands suspended its financial aid to Juba. As Philip Thornaleu reports for VOA from Juba, the government says it's grateful for the Chinese support.
South Sudan Foreign Affairs Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin says China's donation reflects the long-term cooperation between the two countries. Marial says China ambassador to South Sudan, Mark Quyang, is a good friend of the people of South Sudan.
So this is a genuine cooperation, and we thank them on behalf of our president, on behalf of the government, and on behalf of the people of South Sudan, who are supposed to benefit from all these technical cooperation agreements.
Marial says the government will put the money to good use.
And the cooperation is extensive. Like, for example, this grant of $25 million will be targeting specifically the issue of agricultural projects, for example, to assist part of humanitarian disaster. We have got this food insecurity. And in food insecurity in a country is a very bad sign. It hinders development. That's why you need this grant, for example, which will go to help small farmers to see what can be done to improve agriculture and improve food security.
Chinese ambassador to South Sudan, Mark Quyang, says the grant will be implemented as agreed to by the two governments. He says the 1.8 million displaced South Sudanese need food and other emergency supplies now. He says China is confident the two warring parties will end the eight-month-old conflict soon and work together on forming a transitional government of national unity.
We hope relevant parties could put the national and the people's interest first, cherish peace and stability so as to resolve their disputes peacefully through negotiation.
Quyang says despite the slow progress at the peace talks in Addis, South Sudanese should continue to hope for a better future.
South Sudan is rich in natural resources, and the people here is intelligent. The development potential is huge, I believe. Under the leadership of the government and the help of the Chinese government, the sustainable economic development will be made. The living standard of people will improve, and your esteemed country will be prosperity very soon.
Maria says he hopes China's grant will convince the Dai government to change its mind and decide to continue sending aid to the South Sudan government.
Every country is free to give you or not to give. We can't take them to court, can we? Because they are offering on their own. And if they say they will not be giving us, we'll say, well, one day they may decide to give us.
The Dutch Minister of Foreign Trade and Development Cooperation, Liliane Fullerman, announced yesterday in Juba that their support to police training and diplomats has been suspended because of South Sudan human rights violations and what she calls the unwillingness of both parties to take the peace talks seriously. Marial maintains the government is negotiating in good faith.
We are fully committed to peace. You have seen the rededication on the implementation of the cessation of hostilities our president signed with the other presidents in IGAD countries. What more commitment do you need from that? I think if there is anything that Netherlands should do is to put pressure on the rebels so that they come back to the table so that we can enhance peace within 45 days.
In late August, IGAD gave South Sudan warring parties 45 days to reach an agreement on forming a transitional government. The two sides have so far failed to approve a regional plan created by IGAD mediators to end the conflict. For BOA News, I am Philip Thonaleu in Juba.
South Sudan's national health official has instructed health workers in Jonglei State to expand healthcare services to four counties controlled by rebels in northern Jonglei State. Since fighting erupted between the government and the rebel forces in December, it's becoming nearly impossible for health workers to reach patients in the four counties. But as Jacob Achek reports from Bor, the government is working to change that.
National Minister of Health Riek Guy Cook said the government has a policy of delivering early services to all 79 counties in the country. That include places where the rebels are in control. Guy says early services can still be delivered to those counties through non-governmental organizations.
Those contracts which were given before the crisis of 15 December, as a policy, we said these contracts are valid, including areas under the control of the rebels, including their salaries for those who are carrying out health activities in accordance with the EPI or whatever health activity within the contract of that NGO is given. And the security allows that many through Juba International Airport.
Guy says the policy of extending health services to areas under rebel control was a directive from South Sudan President Salva Kiir. He says NGOs operating in rebel-controlled areas will update the Ministry of Health on their efforts.
They are supposed to give you reports regularly about what is happening in Wuror, what is happening in Nyirol, what is happening in Akobo, what is happening in Pangak. They must give you regular reports because they are doing this thing on your behalf, because this thing is a temporary situation that we are going to overcome.
State Ministry of Health Angun Gordon Kwal says 2 months ago they received report of Kaladar in Akobo and Nyirol counties. He said they respond immediately.
Recently, there were reports of upsurge of cases of Kaladar in Nyirol and in Akobo counties. So we have sent in medicine, we have sent in training material, and even consultant has gone actually to help in training health personnel who are on the ground. In Jonglei, we are complying with those orders, and we have allowed all our partners who are operational in the counties under the rebel to be continuing to deliver health services.
Since the fighting erupted, millions of South Sudanese have little access to health care. The governor of Jonglei State, John Kong Nguyen, last week urged the State Ministry of Health to offer services to vulnerable populations that have no access to facilities in the northern part of Jonglei State, and that they get free access to health care. The United States Agency for International Development has sent $10 million worth of health supply to South Sudan Ministry of Health to be distributed to all 79 counties in the country. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
Residents of Warab State Capital Kwajok say the only bank operating in the area is taking advantage of its monopoly and of its customers. As Santino Monod reports, residents of Kwajok say they will continue to be at the mercy of the Kenya Commercial Bank in South Sudan until more banks open their doors in Warab.
I will work as civil servant in Kwajok and bank with the Kenya Commercial Bank, or KCB, sometimes. He says he gets shoddy services from the bank. For example, he says ATM cards that were issued to customers to make it easier to withdraw cash sometimes do not work at all. And because KCB is the only bank in town, that means customers can find themselves left high and dry when they try to get some of their own money, he says.
We are being exploited. Unless we have other branches of other banks operating in Kwajok, that's where now we'll see the changes in KCB. Otherwise, banking is something people can really progress.
Deng Yor, a trader in Kwajok, says the situation would improve if the state government allow more banking institutions to set up shops in Warab State. This should make the banking sector more competitive and services would improve, he says.
We have only one KCB in the state, and that bank is not enough for the community and for the government to bank. So we would like to request if government can at least open some more banks. You know, competition in business can at least free community to have something.
Another trader in Kwajok, Tim Moses, says colleagues who bank with the KCB South Sudan in Kwajok have told him horror stories about not being able to get their hands on their money. He has this message for the bank's management.
The information to the bank, we need more improvement. Money should always be full. I've been hearing a lot of complaints from some of my colleagues, friends. Sometimes the person need big money. Can't even be told that at the moment we have no money. We have to wait.
KCB's branch manager in Kwajok, Sadiq Monsevi, says his team is doing its best to serve customers. But he admits that there are times when the bank runs into technical problems. Monsevi sounds a little rehearsed when he speaks in defense of the bank.
Banking with us will make it easier for somebody to access his money conveniently, easily in any of our branches. Your money will be safe, secured, and access it at demand.
Monsevi says apart from banking services, the KCB branch in Kwajok helps in education, health, and other key sectors in the state. That is part of the bank's social responsibility, he says. The branch has more than 5,000 customers from all around Warab. For BOA News, I'm Santino Manut Ayuel in Kwajok, Warab State.
Here's advice from the international medical group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, to help limit the spread of the Ebola virus. First, do not touch or eat the bushmeat of animals from the forest. Avoid contact with blood, urine, feces, vomit, sweat, tears, saliva, mucus, or genital secretions of an Ebola patient. Do not handle the bodies of the patients who have died of Ebola. Inform the nearest health center of any suspected Ebola cases. Seek health care immediately, because infected people have a much higher survival rate if they receive early treatment at a health facility compared to staying home. These are recommendations from the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, on how to prevent the spread of Ebola.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, sports proves to be a valuable outlet for South Sudanese children who want to forget about the violence, at least for a little while. That story is coming up next.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday, from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think women's organizations are effective in helping achieve equality? Why or why not?
Organizations, they are effective in promoting equality because as of now, they are trying to bring some changes in the government sector. Like with recently, we have been having these 50-50 campaigns and promoting women's rights. So basically, I recommend the work.
Yeah, they're doing that considering their 50-50 campaign. I think the only problem is that we're not supporting them.
On that, I can say no, because much of these organizations which are actually fighting for equality in as far as men and women are concerned, they're just doing it for money. So I haven't noticed much effect in terms of what they're actually implementing for equality to be there between men and women.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The governor of Central Equatoria has appointed Bidali Cosmas as the new commissioner of Yei River County. Customers say reducing insecurity and restoring peaceful coexistence are his two top priorities. He tells Waki Simon Wudu in Juba that he is up to the task that lies ahead of him.
As soon as I take my office, what should be done is to consolidate peace and security in the county. And the next thing is to mobilize the community to make a difference in the lives of the citizens of the county can be met.
Why is peace security a priority to you?
It is a priority because without peace and security, many efforts cannot easily be mobilized to be engaged in the development processes. Many opportunities, many things that you need to stimulate development will be scared off, and the potentials cannot be easily exploited. So for that matter, it is a priority.
The issue of road infrastructure is one of the challenges. The majority population of Yei are farmers. There is a challenge of tribalism. Could you try to share how you're going to deal with these critical challenges?
I hope there will be more than the challenges we've just mentioned. It will not be me alone, but me and the people of the place together will be able to address these challenges. But we'll look at this within the restraint of the laws. When we'll be working to serve them, we'll work to serve everybody. And in this case, challenges of this tribe and that tribe and will actually not really surface if you serve everybody. Yeah, roads, especially feeder roads with respect to Yei River County, has been a very big challenge. I've been there and I know what it means, but of course I've come at a time we know the country is in a war, and then many things are changing here and there. And the situation is a little different from the situation before the war broke. And I believe Yei River County has the potential of resources that can be exploited to make sure some of these challenges can be provided solutions.
That's newly appointed commissioner for Yei River County, Bidali Kasmas, speaking to Waki Simon Wudu in Juba earlier today. A new documentary is screening today on the war-ravaged Nuba Mountains of Sudan. Government forces have been fighting rebels there since 2011 and frequently bombing the area. Many civilians have been injured. The film premieres at the International Toronto Film Festival. VOA fellow Nabil Biagio spoke to the director and the producer of the film and has this report.
The documentary Beats of the Antonov gets its name from the sound of the Russian-made plane used by the Sudanese military as a bomber. When director Hajuj Kuka set out to make his film, he thought it would tell the harrowing tale of people living under siege in Blue Nile State and the Nuba Mountains in Sudan.
But when I was in one of the refugee camps in Blue Nile, I actually found out that everybody at night plays a lot of music. There's a lot of life. People are alive and playing music and dancing and happy. And it was not the reflection that you would normally have about refugees.
In fact, Hajuj says he was astonished at the resilience of the people of the Nuba Mountains, just north of the border with South Sudan's Unity State. He says that by singing, dancing, wrestling, even as they are bombed by Russian-built Antonov planes, the Nubans are making a statement about their identity as African people who are being oppressed and dominated by the Arab Muslim government in Khartoum.
The premise of the film is that the war in Sudan is mainly because of the identity issues that are going in Sudan, and mainly because of the Arab Islamic identity that's put on the whole country.
Hajuj taught himself to make movies. He has directed several short films that he has shot in different parts of Sudan, many of which focus on human rights abuses by the Khartoum government. Beats of the Antonov is his second long film. It runs for 65 minutes. The first was called Darfur's Skeleton and told the stories of people who live in Darfur through their own voices. Hajuj hopes that his new film will provoke discussions in Sudan about the need to embrace cultural diversity. Only then, he says, can the country avoid being broken up even more than it was 3 years ago when it lost a third of its land and population when South Sudan became independent.
Sudan, eventually, is going to become this great place once we allow all these cultures to nourish and we start celebrating them. And I really saw it in my trip.
Stephen Markovitz, the South African producer of Beats of the Antonov, says he was captivated by the
sophisticated and complex argument the film has developed. And it's the first time I've seen something where I felt like I'm starting to get a handle on what's going on in Sudan.
Markovitz has produced numerous documentaries and short films in different parts of Africa. But he says Beats of the Antonov is unique.
When I came across this project, I was contacted by Hajuj, and I looked at some of the material and immediately knew that A, there was really incredible talent, and B, there was unique access to material that I'd never seen before, didn't know anyone who had shot there before.
Following the debut of Beats of the Antonov at the Toronto Film Festival, Hajuj wants to take it on the road and show it at film festivals in the United States and Europe. Its promoters are the characters singing and dancing under the beats of the Antonov. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
From Nuba Mountains, we move back to South Sudan. In South Sudan, it's a tough place for children to grow up. But in spite of the violence and hunger surrounding them, some of South Sudanese children still hope they can transform their nation through sport. Mungume Debs Rwakarinj sent us this report about kids who are starting small on the soccer pitch but dreaming big.
Dozens of young South Sudanese come to Bulku Grounds almost every evening to play one of their favorite sports, soccer. Tonight, 11-year-old John William is waiting on the sidelines for his chance to play on the dusty pitch that is just a few hundred meters away from several government ministries. William watches as older boys play a hotly contested game on the rundown pitch. William says one day he wants to run onto a perfectly kept pitch at an international match wearing a South Sudan jersey.
Like football, because when we play football, you feel fit. And when you play football, you can become a star of South Sudan. Like in Uganda there, they have stars, but here we don't have stars. That's why we train ourselves to help our country.
William says he's inspired by Argentinian soccer star Lionel Messi, who plays for Barcelona. William's teacher at Bulku A Primary School, Peter Odwa, says many kids in South Sudan have the athletic ability to become very good at sports, including soccer. What they are lacking is equipment and facilities to train.
The students or the pupils, they lack the sport, the football, one, then even the volleyball for the girls and even for the boys. So I need only all these things in my school and in all schools in Southern Sudan.
In Central Equatoria State, sports activities are included in the school curriculum, says Amos Longa Modi, the Director for Quality Promotion and Innovation in the Ministry of Education for the state.
Normally, an active body gives us an active mind. When children play and then they're given specific areas of games, you find that these games develop even their mind, develop their body. And so it's important that they must be given all the opportunities around within the learning environment.
But he acknowledges there's not enough equipment or infrastructure in South Sudan to allow children to fully develop their sporting talents. Peter Baptist Abakar, the undersecretary in the Ministry of Youth and Sports, says the any sports infrastructure in South Sudan was destroyed during the decades-long civil war that led to the creation of South Sudan and the current crisis in the country. He says the government is trying to put that right.
We also have to review some of our policies. For example, at the moment, sports is not being actively practiced in schools. And you can't have any promotion of sports and its development if you don't start with the young people, the children down there. Sports now has become a right. It's even a human right.
He says his ministry is working with the Ministry of Education to incorporate sports in the education system. Abakar says South Sudan has been admitted to some international sports organizations like FIFA, and that will help bring in funds to develop sports. But William and other young people here are not waiting for the government to fix things so they can play. They have already decided they will play football, in spite of the hardships they face, like not having a ball to play with. To overcome that, they pulled their pocket money and came up with enough to buy a soccer ball. It is an old, ordinary soccer ball, not one of the new World Cup replicas. And it cost the boys 100 South Sudanese pounds, or around $30. 14-year-old Luke Yokwe is proud as punch of that football.
We get that ball with all our money. We collect £2, that's why you can buy a ball.
Yokwe says he was encouraged by his mother to play soccer. She thinks that one day he might be able to make a living as a soccer player. But Yokwe wants to do better than just make a living at his favorite sports. He wants to be South Sudan's answer to Cote d'Ivoire and Chelsea striker Didier Drogba. But this evening, Yokwe and William have to wait their turn to play with the only soccer ball they have for around 50 soccer-loving kids. When the older boys kick the ball out of bounds, the young kids take it and run with it. In their dreams, if they take that old, ordinary football and run with it today, they might just find themselves one day running onto a manicured pitch, kicking a FIFA-approved soccer ball and helping their young country to make its mark on the international stage. And Yokwe's mother will be proud as punch of her son when that happens. For VOA News, I am Mugumedes Rakarinj in Juba.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Mudongo by Palaso and Seba. We have been listening to Ugandan-based musicians Paloso and Sheba with the song Mudongo. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and have a good weekend. Tune in on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.